Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is your girl Mitzi, and this is Mitzi. Let's think about it. Today, we are thinking about cruel lessons. And luckily for me, this is a special guest episode. So I have a special guest, Dr. Randy, here on the show because let's be honest, we need to think about this together because I think we all go through some cruel lessons. So, Randy, thank you so much for coming on my show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very good this morning. I'm delighted to be here, Mitzi.
Awesome, awesome. I know you wrote the book that's called Cruel Lessons, but I guess I just have to ask you, did you go through a good amount of cruel lessons of your own that made you realize I gotta write a book?
The answer is yes, most definitely. In fact, some of the cruelest lessons that I had to walk through is part of what inspired me to write this particular story. So there's a d direct connection between my actual experience and then the fiction that I created in the novel.
Yes, I think because one of the things that I know as being an author, as well as speaking with many other authors, is that the fact that, when we write these novels, that we always put a little part of ourselves and our experiences into our books, into our writing. So I guess my question is, how many trials have you had to go through to realize like this was needed for the world to hear and to think about and to reflect on, because, to reflect on your lessons, to reflect on, that moment of growth, because, when you go through something and you learn it, that's part of growing, So what was it for you?
Well, I think I should probably explain that originally the first skeleton of this story, the basic fabric of this story was written as therapy. So I was dealing with some rather really difficult work issues, harassment and intimidation, and I was trying to find a way to deal with that that was constructive. And I found that when I started to create the what eventually became Cruel Lessons many years later, there was a freeing effect of taking the people that I was dealing with, twisting their character some, and taking the negative energy and the ugliness that they had done and actually turn it into evil. To create the story about a drug dealer pushing drugs in the middle school, and then the efforts by educators to stop him. So it was very cleansing at the time. I think now that it's years later, and I've redone the manuscript and more times than I care to count, I think it's ready for the world in terms of the lesson that it brings for them as well.
It was nice that you were able to first start off writing for therapy. I think that's a beautiful way to start off writing because once you put it out in paper, you are able to realize and see your situation in a different perspective. And then the fact that you were able to manipulate the characters, manipulate your situation so that it can be a little bit worse here, a little bit better here, you got to play with it. And now you created something beautiful that you shared to the world. So that is something amazing. And I know, excuse me, my eyes been bothering me. I don't know what is going on. I know that I really do want to talk to you about how important trials are for ourselves, because that's what we go through constantly. So in your opinion, how important are trials?
Well, I think in lots of ways, the trials are what make you grow. Just speaking strictly as a writer, I am not sure that I would be here, that I would have five novels published, that you and I would be having this conversation if I had not experienced those trials years ago that I had to deal with. I mean, I felt that I was doing what was right for kids. I felt that I was trying to speak truth to power, but that often comes with consequences, as it did. And having learned from that, I actually what happened in I didn't know this when I was in the middle of it, but I actually grew and ended up getting better positions and better responsibilities and a better job. So all of that is, when looking back, is very informative. When you're in the middle of it, it's kind of difficult to go, oh, well, it'll be better on the other side. But it really is. I mean, and that's part of the important lesson, is to know that it's better on the other side. In my novel, what I've done is I've created characters many of whom have secrets that they have withheld inside themselves. And in some way that's held them back. So part of the story is them dealing with this, with the negative consequences of their past and coming to grips with that and then moving on beyond that. So it's kind of the same. It's in the lesson is in the same category as what we're talking about.
Yeah. The lesson is most definitely in the same category, but I think it's nice to also remember that in the moment, in the situation that you're in, it doesn't feel like it's going to get better, or it doesn't feel like there's a light at the end of the tunnel, because all you feel is the chaos surrounding you. But you were able to finally look back when you were in a better position and a better place in your life, and you were like, wow, there was a reason for this, you know. And it's nice to hear that, because not a lot of people are able to do that sometimes, you know what I mean? They're so stuck, you know. And do you have any advice for those type of people who are probably stuck right now in that fog because they just are in the middle of the chaos?
I think the part of the answer lies in first, belief in yourself. So, you know, I even in the midst of the most difficult times, I never really lost that belief. And I'm a firm believer in faith. I do honestly believe that when God closes a door, he opens a window. Now, what I found is sometimes it's really hard to squeeze through that window. But if you can do that, the window will get you to a better place. And if people can have faith that that's going to happen, I think the other advice is you don't sit in the middle of your problems and wait for someone else to solve them. You know, I've learned that that's not going to happen. You are the master of your own universe, so you need to be able to drive that in the direction that you want that to go, even if it's only taking little steps at a time.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. You know, it's those little crazes, those little goals. Sometimes I think that people get too strung up with, you know, what they want for the future, and they make these big milestones and these big goals that they forget all of the little accomplishments that are winning them, you know, that are making them better. And I'm curious, because I know you said that you started writing this as a therapy and you wrote 5 novels. So is that how you kind of wrote all of your 5 novels as a therapy? Or was it just this book, Cruel Lessons, that you started as a therapy?
It was only this one book. So this I had a goal as a teenager to be a writer. And to be honest, the desire to serve kids as an educator overcame that. So I spent almost 40 years serving children as both a teacher and a college prof and a school leader. And I really enjoyed that. But I never really lost my desire to create something, to write something. Yeah. What this trial did was it reawakened that desire that had sat dormant for 20 some years. And I was amazed at my ability to create a credible story using the impetus of what I was going through at the time, taking the same people that I was dealing with, changing them. You know, they're not those aren't the characters of the book, but using them for inspiration to be able to create the story. Once I was able to do that, and once I got the first draft of this story down, I was empowered to go, you know, you can do more than this. So then I started kind of getting back into my writing self and coming up with more inspiration for more stories, and then the rest is history.
Very nice. I love hearing how other authors start their journey into writing, because I think it's beautiful how, you know, when the saying is everyone has a story, but not everybody actually shares it, you know. And when somebody actually shares their story, I think it does make such a ripple effect on people's lives. I think books truly do, excuse me, can really change the directory if you are able to reflect in the right direction. And I'm curious, because I know you said that the other books were a little different, but, you know, I know I write a little different. So when you start writing, you know, do you start like with an outline, or do you just, you know what, I'm gonna just start writing and writing and writing? How does your writing skills?
My writing, as I have moved from book one to book two to book three to book four to book five, as my writing approach, my writing process has changed some. I've always said that I'm somewhere in the middle between a pantser and a plotter. So one parts of my book or parts of my every book that I have, I always require a great amount of research. So my books are extensively researched. Okay. I can talk about the research in this particular book, but because of that, that requires a good deal of planning. You can't write by the seat of your pants when you don't have the details that you want to blend into the story that are researched. So that part is always plotted. But the story, the organic story, is largely pantsed. I kind of have an idea of where I'm going. I kind of know what kind of where we're headed. But I do things very different than some other writers. So the first book was a thriller, but the remaining four were all mysteries. And one of the things that I do with my mysteries that are different than other writers is I don't decide who the bad guy is going to be until about three quarters of the way through the book. So okay. I always make sure that there are a couple of possible two, three, four villains that could be actual bad guy. And I've nurtured that through the story. When I get to the end, I go back and make sure I put the right red herrings in and stuff. But so that part of that makes it a little more organic. And when I get to about 75% of the story, it just kind of comes to me that it has to be suspect B. Okay. This is the one that's more logical. So that's part of the organic process as opposed to the plotted process that I have.
Yeah, I can see that. And I like that because let's be honest, sometimes when we're going through our cruel lessons and our obstacles or our struggles or whatever that people want to call it and label it, because let's be honest, it's hard times, you know, and when we go through our hard times, you know, we don't know who the villain is sometimes, you know, sometimes it's a mystery to ourselves. And it's hard to tell until we are able to step back and really like, oh, okay. So I realized they were actually helping me, but I couldn't see that, or they were actually in my way, or, you know, and it takes time to really see that. I mean, for you, do you have to ask yourself like questions for you to have those type of reflections, or how do you realize that you have those like, oh, okay, that light bulb moment?
Well, I would like to say that I'm able to come to those analyses in the moment, but that's not normally the case. Normally, I have been able to do some reflection. Believe it or not, I do the best reflection laying in bed. I'll think about going, well, that, no, that was not. I should have, you know, oh, why didn't I do this instead? Oh, that's what was. So I almost never am able to come up with the right answer or the understanding in the moment. I'm not smart enough to do that. But upon reflection, I end up, you know, it is true that what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So I do believe that going through the trials, first of all, it made me stronger in the sense that each trial that I dealt with made me a better administrator, made me a better educator, made me more concerned with taking care of children and doing the right thing. So and I think it also made me stronger as an individual, you know, stronger as a leader. So now I'm grateful for having dealt with it. I certainly wasn't when I was in the midst of it, but now I am.
Yeah, I understand that most definitely. I think that's nice that we're talking about this, because, you know, people also always just need to remember that they're cruel lessons. The part that is hard to go past is the cruel part. You know what I mean? They're stuck at the cruel part, and that's unfair. Why me? Why me? Why me? Well, me. And then they get a pity party, and it's no fun because nobody likes to join nobody else's pity party. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a no fun situation. But I'm just curious, because this is all about my curiosity of my show, is what made you realize that education was for you, you know, and for you to put the education in, as an importance in your books, you know, especially with this one? I mean, what made you realize?
Yeah, I somewhere in my teens, probably as I was turning 20, I kind of got the revelation that I was blessed with some very good teachers and not and some not so very good teachers, but I saw the difference that a really great teacher could have on young men, on children in general and stuff, and I decided I think I could do that. I honestly do believe that in this country, our success of our culture hinges on the public school system. The public school system does a good job of educating our children, soon to become adults. We get a better culture. In the areas where we fail, we end up creating problems. So that I saw that even as a kid, I saw the importance of that, that institution in that role. And I wanted to play a part in that. Now, originally all I wanted to do was teach, but I kind of 12 years into my career, kind of got the calling of, I think I might want to be a leader in a school, and ended up doing that. I served as somebody in charge of schools for 28 years. I was assistant superintendent and superintendent in 28 years, for 28 years in four different districts. So I kind of saw everything over that period of time. And I saw one of the things that was really nice is you saw the impact of dramatic teaching. You saw the impact of good program. You saw the impact of kids being saved. So it was a very rewarding experience, and it made me confirm that I had made a good choice.
That's good.
I have been writing all that time. Yeah, probably. But you know, you can't do everything. I'm raising children. I've got three kids. You know, so you have to make choices, and I'm happy with the choices I made.
Good. That's good. I'm glad to hear. And I'm glad to hear that you were able to see the beauty in education. You were able to see the impact and those life-changing moments where the sparkle in a child's eye, where they finally get, oh, I finally got it. You know, those moments are beautiful. But I'm just wondering, were there ever moments where you realized that since you've been to four different districts and you've seen a lot playing different roles in the educational system, have you seen areas where you wish that they did a better job in?
Oh, without a doubt, there are clearly areas where we, as a culture, I'm talking about public schools now, where we as a culture have not succeeded. And I'll give you one very critical example that has happened in the last 3 years. All of the ignorance and discussion around vaccines indicates that lots of people. Way too many people don't really understand science. They don't understand how science works. They don't understand the progressive nature of the learning of science. They don't understand the experimental nature that you, when you're in the middle of trying to address a problem, you don't know what all the issues are. Those are things that the school systems, that the public school system should be teaching children to understand. Not that we ever expect anybody to be a scientist. That's really not the point. But the point is that's why you need to take science classes so you understand that science is evolving. Everything about the pandemic and the vaccines indicates that there's a whole range of people who really never got that they never got that understanding. They don't get how science works. It's not a one size fits all. It's not a turn the key and you're done. And clearly, in my opinion, that's a failing of the last 20 years, the last 30 years of school. Were I in that position now, I'm not, I'm retired. Were I in that position now, I would be sitting back down with those people responsible for science and go, here's why is it this way? What do we do about it? How do we solve that problem right now? That's just one example.
Yeah, I think that's a beautiful example. I mean, since you're talking about science and how there's a more need to break it down to a sense where even grade schoolers and kids in elementary school, I mean, kids are smart. Kids absorb things like a sponge. People underestimate how beautiful a mind is of a child. And I think if you are able to really break that down in even as young as grade school, I think that's will be a great way to really teach children to understand what's going on when they go to the doctor. So they're not scared. So they're not nervous. So they're not living in their mind because of what mommy and daddy don't know and what society and social media and everything else is telling them. So I think that's beautiful. I also think that they should also teach about growing food and, those type of natural, knowing how to maintain and be natural adults. You know what I'm saying? I think that would be a nice course to actually have, not a course in middle school where you have to bring a baby. I don't want to bring a baby. I want to learn how to grow things. You know what I mean? I want to understand how to do laundry or to do other things that are common that as an adult you need to do when you are an adult. What are your opinions on that?
Well, you're talking about the program that we used to call home economics, and I was really sad. Almost most of the districts that I'm aware of have done away with those classes, and
I
think it's a real disservice to kids. Like every other program, we had strong and weak teachers in those programs too. But I saw lots of those teachers who really filled a need that kids had in nutrition, in housekeeping, and sometimes in baby caring and all those kinds of things. And we've been so focused on the mind, the three R's or however you want to define that, that we forgot about these other responsibilities that kids are going to be thrown into that many, I'm not pointing fingers at any parents, but many don't have that support or that understanding at home. And they're going to go from leaving high school to, I got to do all this stuff on my own. And they don't really know how to do that. I mean, so yes, I'm in complete agreement with you about that. I think that's important. And, I think more to your thing, I think if we would think about that in terms of the long-term effect, I think we would make better choices. When I work with my teachers, I always tried to talk about, I said, well, first of all, we're going to decide on what's best for kids, not what's best for adults, not what makes it easy, not what costs the least, none of those things. We'll look at all of those things later. But first, we talk about what's right for kids, and then we'll go through the other possible things. When you start making decisions on what's best for children, you almost always make the best decisions. That's my opinion in schools.
Wow. I like that. I wish more people would think that way, because you're absolutely right. You always hear about people arguing about the budget, but they never actually realize, how about the kids? What do the kids need? And before you know it, the school is just bones, because the kids are not learning anything. The kids are not engaging. Their mind isn't engaged, and they're bored. And then when kids become bored, they become destructive sometimes. And nobody likes a destructive child, because then all they see are adults pointing at them, predicting that they're going to have a bad future and a bad life because they're bored and they're destructive. And I think that's ridiculous how half of the time adults feel the right to label a child at the wrong point of a moment. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
And I used to preach that important. And two of the districts that I worked in, we had a very sizable at-risk population, sizable number of kids that were really did not have a lot of support. And I used to tell teachers that you will make the difference between this kid having a productive life or ended up being on welfare or ending up being in jail. I said, so what they learn here will make the difference that will propel them in terms of their life. And that has more to do with what the favorite saying was, I don't care how much you know until I know how much you care. So that's what kids, even hard kids that are try to be tough and mean, that's really what they mean. They want teachers to care about them first, and then to teach them what they need to learn.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I like that. It's very good. So I guess my next question is, what could you tell your younger self if you could tell your younger self anything?
Well, that's a really good question.
That's a thinker.
I think if I've never been a real anxious guy, but I had trouble at certain points in my life believing in myself. I thought I was a good teacher. Eventually knew I was a good teacher. I knew I was a good educator. But early on in my younger self, I was more likely to doubt that, given if circumstances threw the wrong way. So I think what I would be, if I could go back and talk to that younger self, I would go, look, buckle up, and you know where you are. You know who you are. Just put your best foot forward and let the chips fall where they may. Things are going to go way things are going to go the way they're supposed to go if you're doing the right thing. Go from there.
Yeah, exactly. I know it. That's absolutely right. As long as you are doing the right thing, who's to say that you're doing it wrong? You know what I mean? It's what's in your heart. And I know you said that you're a man of faith, and you know, and I'm assuming that's the reason why you do the right thing and you try to always do the right thing because you hold on to that faith. Is that right?
That's true. That is correct. And I do, you know, I if you try to do the right thing, that doesn't mean you always do right. You're still going to screw up, but you are trying to do what you think in the moment is your is the best decision, the best choice. And you, as a person, you really can't do a whole lot more than that. You can ask for inspiration, you can pray for guidance and that kind of stuff, but all you got is you. So go for it. Do the best that you can and step forward with it.
That's awesome. And do you think if you would have listened to that, or you would have taken that advice when you were at that point when you were talking about your to your younger self, do you think you would have you know, had a different perspective going through the obstacles that you did go through?
Maybe a little bit. I might have had a little more, a little less anxious perspective. I mean, my concern when I went through these, or as I mentioned to you, the couple times that this happened in my career, I have a full, I have a family to raise. I have three children and a wife, and you know, so my anxiety was more about, well, how do I take care of them more than what's going to happen to me?
Yeah.
So. But all that came worked out fine anyway. And the irony is, I know now that each time that I encountered that problem, when I came through the problem, I ended up in a better place than I was when I encountered the problem. So
There you go. I mean, I like it. I mean, I guess that wraps up the cruel lesson is that you end up finding out you have a better situation at the long run as long as you are able to have that perspective shift and know that you did the right thing at the right moment. Because, like you said, you only have the day, you only have the moment, you only have now. You could pray, you can fast, you can read, you can jump up and down, you can do whatever you want. But as long as you're doing what you know is right in your heart, then hey, that's the best you can do. And just keep doing the right thing each and every time you can. I think that's awesome. Awesome. So, I guess to start wrapping up the show, I know you already spoke about some great points and some great, oh my goodness. So, this has been such a great conversation already. What can be some lasting words of wisdom that you can leave my audience off with to keep on thinking?
well, I think it, what I one of my goals in my writing is to provide no, new knowledge that readers don't have. So, in addition to everything else that we have said about believing in yourself, I think an important part of that is to keep on learning. That even though it doesn't matter what your age is, it doesn't matter where you are in your if you combine what we've already talked about a belief in yourself, about trying to do the best thing with a desire to keep taking in new knowledge, to keep learning, I think you're gonna you are heading for your best life. That's what I believe.
Awesome. I like that response. I like that a lot. Thank you. Thank you, guys. That is something to truly, truly keep on thinking. And if you guys want to know about Dr. Randy, you want to check out his book, I have his lovely website on my website. I have if it's right under his photo, just click right under there and it goes directly to his site and you can check out all of the goodness that Dr. Randy has to offer to the world so that you can keep on thinking. So that's it. That's the show. Always, always, always keep thinking, y'all. Bye.